Jesus of Nazareth really like? What did he look like? What did he say? And how does the man of history measure up to the picture that millions of people of faith hold in their minds as Christ? This is Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. Later today on the program, we'll address those questions with Reza Aslan. He's the author of the book Zealot, the most recent entry into the world of searching for the historical Jesus, but one of the first to benefit from the era of quick internet book sales and a particularly controversial Fox News interview. If you have questions or comments for Reza Aslan, you can post them on the KCUR Facebook page or email them to us at centralstandard@kcur.org. But first this morning, the future of the American space program. Joel Achenbach is a reporter for The Washington Post. He's here in town to speak tonight at an event hosted by the Kansas City Public Library. Joel Achenbach, welcome to Central Standard.
Brian, great to be here.
We'll tell you more about that event later. It's at the Central Branch. That's 14 West 10th Street at 6:30 p.m. and admission is free. Joel, I know you're also going to talk about some of the changes at The Washington Post in the last couple of weeks. But before we get to that, let's spend a few minutes on the topic you originally came to talk about, the future of space exploration. Is it safe to say that these are not exactly the glory days of the American space program?
This is a tricky time right now for NASA, which is in a transition. The shuttle has been retired, and they still have the International Space Station. What are they going to do next? I mean, where are they going to go? Where everyone wants to go is to Mars. I mean, that's the obvious destination out there. That's the dream, you know, to send humans to Mars. The problem is it's just really hard to do that and not crash on Mars. The Martian atmosphere is not ideal. It's too thin to be of much help when you bring in a spacecraft. It can't really break the spacecraft, but it's just thick enough to cause problems. So landing on Mars is a challenge. So where are you going to go? The current policy of the United States is to send humans to an asteroid by 2025. This is something that Obama said in 3 years ago that we would do.
And why an asteroid? What was the thinking there?
Because it's easier than going to Mars. It's a potential stepping stone. Now, but here's the problem. Even that is really, really hard to do.
Okay, but I guess what is the benefit of going to an asteroid? What do we get out of being there?
That's a good question. Actually, these are all good questions. What are we doing? Where are we going? Why are we doing it? These are the basic questions. So, I would say the logic behind going to an asteroid is that you develop the capability of doing long duration space flight. You develop the capability of keeping astronauts alive for hundreds of days in space. You'd have the hardware that would eventually help you go to Mars. So if the goal is to go to Mars, you have to come up with some smaller incremental steps before you get there. The way they did with Apollo. Keep in mind that with Apollo, they didn't go straight to the moon. Right. They had Mercury, they had Gemini, and then they had Apollo. So going to an asteroid would be a major endeavor. But here's the problem. That is too hard to do because any mission to an asteroid, a near-Earth asteroid, takes hundreds and hundreds of days, and NASA doesn't have the hardware or the money to do that.
We don't know how to put an astronaut on that distance of a trip with enough resources to make it back.
So if it takes hundreds of days, it means you have to keep your astronauts alive for hundreds of days. That would require some kind of habitation module that doesn't exist right now. That would go be attached to the space capsule Orion, which does exist. They're building that capsule now. To understand where NASA is right now, you have to understand the politics and the changing mission directives in recent years. Bush said, "Let's go back to the moon." He created a program, Constellation. Constellation had two rockets, a new space capsule, and eventually it was going to have a lunar lander. Well, Obama killed the Constellation program saying, we don't need to go back to the moon. We've already been to the moon. It's pointless. If we want to go to Mars, going back to the moon is a digression. It's just not helping us. But pieces of that Constellation program survived. A heavy lift rocket called the SLS survived. It's called the Space Launch System. This is a big jumbo rocket that's derived from space shuttle components in part. And this would be able to take a spacecraft to the vicinity of the moon.
And why did they survive if the mission itself went away?
Well, this is another good question. You're asking some very good questions here, I'd say. So why build it, right? I think that question will arise a number of times in the coming years as people ask, what's this rocket for? And the answer is that you would need some kind of rocket like this for an eventual mission to Mars. So the hardware could evolve into something useful for a Mars mission. Secondly, the space capsule they're building, Orion, that also could be potentially applicable to a Mars mission someday. The main reason they're building this stuff, though, is because it's big money for stakeholders out there. You know, when you're spending billions of dollars on something, you create a constituency for it. So they're designing the rocket in Alabama. They're building it in Louisiana. They're testing it in Mississippi. They're going to launch it in Florida, and it'll be controlled out of Texas.
And I bet there are members of Congress from each of those states, aren't there?
Amazingly enough, there are.
So economically, what is the impact that we're talking about? We're talking about jobs, obviously. We're talking about major contracts.
Jobs and contracts, lots of money. There is an element of national prestige in having a human space flight program that I think is non-trivial. There are people who think that societies need to expand, explore the frontier, and that if you retract, if you pull back, that you are setting the stage for decline.
Is there a consensus in the scientific community about the value of this particular expedition or this effort with an asteroid?
Well, what we haven't done is actually describe what they're really planning on doing. So
yeah.
I mentioned that the plan was to go to an asteroid in 2025. But going to an asteroid, as I said, is just too hard. So they've come up with a fallback position to that, which is called the Asteroid Redirect Mission. And the idea is you'd send a robotic spacecraft out, and it would extrude this tent-like contraption and swallow a small asteroid, maybe one the size of a small house, you know, or like a cabin or something. And you would swallow this asteroid, and then you would tug it back to an orbit where it would go into orbit around the moon. So now you have, going around the moon, this robotic spacecraft attached to a bagged asteroid. Now this thing is going around the moon. Then you would go up in your new rocket and your new spaceship, and the Orion space capsule would also go into orbit around the moon. It would dock with the robotic spacecraft. Orion, unfortunately, doesn't have an airlock. It doesn't have a hatch like the way the space shuttle had or the way the International Space Station has. So what you'd have to do is empty all the oxygen out of all the air out of the capsule. The astronauts, hopefully by then, would already have put on their spacesuits. They would crawl out of the capsule, and they would clamber along like on a rail, and they would then go to this bag with the asteroid inside. And I guess they would take out tools and they would take samples of the asteroid. Then they would climb back into their capsule and they'd fly back to Earth. That's the plan.
Okay. So I guess I just have to say maybe there's people thinking that this is really an amazing plan, that this would be the most wonderful thing we've ever done as a country and as a space program. It doesn't sound all that grand to get an asteroid in a bag and put it in the orbit around the moon.
Well, you're saying you think it sounds cockamamie, or like a robust mission? It doesn't sound like it's not commensurate with the scale of our ambitions in space as a great nation. I mean, here's the thing: it's kind of in an awkward spot. It's not ambitious enough for what we really want to do eventually, but it's also possibly still too hard. Okay, it's just
right.
even though it sounds a little silly in a way. That would be a hard mission to do. If they could pull it off, they would deserve a round of applause because, first of all, they'd have to find the right target rock. And in the article that we had in the Washington Post this weekend, and I hope the listeners get a chance to check it out, we described how challenging it is even to find a rock that you might potentially capture. So it can't be spinning really rapidly. If it's spinning really rapidly, the moment the robotic spacecraft grabs it, the robotic spacecraft gets torn to shreds. I mean, it's going to probably be flying using solar, the solar array, these sort of flimsy solar electric arrays. That's how they generate power for it. And you don't want to put too much G-forces on your robotic spacecraft when it grabs the rock. So the rock has to be kind of, you know, kind of chilled out, not spinning too much.
So just finding the right rock is really
it has to be the right size. And believe it or not, it's hard to tell how big an object is when you only see it momentarily as a little streak of light in a telescope. It's not like, oh, there's a 7-meter diameter rock. You know, all you see are some pixels of light. What was that? How big was it? So you have to characterize your rock before you go try to grab it. It's a lot of challenges just finding the rock. And then you have the robotic spacecraft. That's not built yet.
This is Joel Achenbach you're hearing. He's from The Washington Post. He's speaking tonight at the Kansas City Public Library, the Central Branch. So that's at 14 West 10th Street. It's at 6:30 p.m. There's a reception beforehand. Admission is free. You can find out more information at kclibrary.org. You're listening right now to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Brian Ellison. Joel, there are...
Let me stop you right there. So admission is free tonight? I'm going to give this away for free.
Yeah, so you may want to just consider that. As you spill out everything you're going to say here tonight. We should mention, by the way, that there is more to what's going on in space besides what the U.S. space program is doing. There's a lot of private endeavors out there right now trying to take – there's Mars One, which is looking for volunteers on a one-way ticket to Mars, right? There's SpaceX and other companies that are working on their own initiatives. What's going on in the private sphere?
I'm doing a series of stories here, and one of my stories will look at that because I cannot answer definitively the question of how much of that stuff is real and how much of that is just arm waving. I can tell you that the Mars One idea is a reality TV show that I would estimate has a very low probability of actually putting human beings on Mars.
How about something like the Blue Origin, Jeff Bezos funded?
This is your transition to talk about the future of the Washington Post.
It's funny how these things coincide.
So Blue Origin is a company owned by Jeff Bezos, who is very interested in space travel, and its goal, I believe, is both suborbital and orbital missions that would, I believe, involve either government contracts or space tourism, but I do not fully understand what it is the Blue Origin is doing with that, and I'll find out because that's part of my upcoming
series.
Story. But it is true that people like Elon Musk, who runs SpaceX, he also is the person behind the Tesla electric car, and recently he proposed that Hyperloop 35-minute pneumatic ride from L.A. to San Francisco. Elon would like to go to Mars very badly, and it's possible that the first humans to land on Mars will be through some kind of private venture. That said, it would cost a lot of money. It's hard to see how that pencils out for anyone, and the physics and the air and the astrodynamics don't go away. I mean, Mars is a long way away. It's a moving object. Any mission there takes a couple of years. NASA estimates that they would have to land a 40-ton payload on Mars in order to keep people alive, and that's 40 times heavier than the Mars rover they landed last summer. And it's very tricky to pull that off.
We do have just a few minutes left, Joel, and I do want to ask you about another major shift in the world, also involving Jeff Bezos, as you mentioned. Your own newspaper is the case in point. The Washington Post was sold last week to Jeff Bezos, founder of Amazon, after a century as a family-owned pillar of American journalism. How do you read how the impact of this sale and other recent activities on the future of American journalism?
Well, we were all just totally shocked and I think emotionally kind of beat up by this event because I'll just speak for myself. I mean, I've always loved working for the Graham family and really look up to to that family and to Don Graham as the leader of the Enterprise. And in a contracting industry that's going through difficult times, it was great knowing that he was there and that family was there. And so that said, rationally, I think it could be great for us if Bezos puts more money into the operation, decides to make us more competitive nationally or internationally in our journalism. It's probably helpful that we will now be privately held and not part of a publicly traded company that has to answer to shareholders. So I think that, you know, on a purely rational level, this could be really good. It's clear that due to the disruption of the internet, that the old business model of newspapers is no longer working. So no one, to my knowledge, has figured out – very few people have figured out a working business model for metropolitan newspapers like
right.
the Washington Post. The New York Times is a whole different business plan. They've done pretty well considering. But for we're essentially a local newspaper.
Still a big local newspaper.
Big local newspaper. So what are we going to do? I don't know. But it's an interesting transition to be living through.
You are not obviously opposed to innovation in journalism. You were one of the first, in fact, the first online columnist for The Washington Post, right? You were a blogger before we called it a blogger.
I started writing online only in 1999 and was thrilled at the way the internet gave us a chance to do that. And then I started my blog, Aachen Blog, in 2005, which it may be the first newspaper blog in the country. I've been trying to sell that idea here and there, and it's still going somehow. I blogged this morning about space, but I'm not sure that it, you know, that that's the blogs are going to solve the business model problem. In the old days, classified ads alone gave us a third of our revenue, and that just basically vanished on us almost overnight. So it's a tricky time. I don't think that the problem is the journalistic content. I think people are hungry for news and hungry for content. I think it's an advertising problem, and hopefully someone will figure that out.
Appreciate the good work you're doing. Joel Achenbach, his first piece in a series on the future of space exploration and America's space program is online now at the Washington Post website and for all to see. Joel is a reporter for the Washington Post. He'll be speaking tonight at the Kansas City Public Library Central Branch. That's 14 West 10th Street at 6:30. Joel, thank you so much for being with us today.
Great to be here, Brian. Thank you.
Coming up, Reza Aslan and his new book about Jesus of Nazareth.